Shattering Miss is devoted to those who know that there's something dreadfully wrong with the political and religious institutions which govern and influence our nation, and who recognize the considerable malfeasance inherent in the media, the military, and global economic influences. We realize that these institutions are the problem, which means they cannot be the solution. Therefore, our mission is to look behind the headlines so that we know who is perpetrating the tragedies that are besieging our planet. Because based upon this plague of adversarial, political, religious, military, and economic influences, we have at most 15 years until all hell is unleashed. A complete economic collapse, world war, unrelenting propaganda, leading to the deaths of billions. As a result, in our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides the only escape from the troubles that will befall this planet. Our number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion at any time, is toll-free. It's 877-300-7645. We begin with President Barack Hussein Obama saying, "I'm sorry." Now, he's not sorry that he passed this law that will bankrupt America. He's not sorry that he is, in effect, eliminating the ability of any private insurance company to compete with the U.S. government. No, he's not sorry that he is going to be assuring that those who are responsible for their health care coverage can no longer have the policies that they want or need. He's sorry that his grand achievement has blown up in his face. You notice he said that we're going to deal with folks who are out of insurance because of this law. Now, he didn't say that he was going to free those who have lost their insurance because of the law from the law. He didn't say he's going to repeal that provision of the law. He didn't say I'm going to rewrite that provision of the law. No, he didn't say that at all. What he says is we're going to deal with them. What does that mean? He's going to throw money at them? What does that mean? He's going to deal with them by telling them that they can accept his plan or no plan and then be fined for having no plan? He didn't say that he was going to resolve this by honoring his promise, which means that they like their policy, they could have kept it. He's not going to do that. Second item in the news from SRN was that discrimination diminishes us all, was the comment that the liberal politician made on behalf of the bill that would make it illegal to discriminate in a job based upon someone's sexual orientation. Not their sexuality, their sexual orientation. Now, mind you, according to God, if you're not discriminating, you will be diminished. From his perspective, it's the opposite. Now, God doesn't want you to be discriminating as it relates to homosexuality. He could give two hoots about it. It's a very, very low item on his list of things that he's concerned about. But if you're not discriminating in terms of differentiating lies like this politician's from God's perspective, and you choose to be beguiled by man's false statements as a result, your soul will be diminished to nothingness upon your demise. You're not going to go to hell. Yeah, that's good news, I guess. You just will cease to exist. Hello, Larry. Welcome to Shattering This. What do you think about this massive typhoon now that is about ready to assault the Philippines? So I understand it. The winds are 200 miles an hour. It will be the single largest storm in the history of mankind, at least in the history of our ability to measure such storms. Well, I have Larry up, but for some reason he's not able either to hear or respond.
Can you hear me now?
Well, I can. Oh, yeah, you're doing a commercial for Can You Hear Me Now? Who was that? Forgotten which cell phone that was.
Yeah, I have a friend over in the Philippines that has he has fish farms. Actually,
okay. Oh, this is going to be dreadful for them. I mean, it's you know the welling up of salt water, and even just the amount of water that's going to besiege the Philippines is going to be astronomical. It's unimaginable what they've got coming here. It's winds are at 200 miles an hour. I mean, we think we've got a massive storm when the winds are sustained over 100 miles an hour. And this is not when you're dealing with force and speeds, the force is actually a square of the speed of velocity. So it's a lot more than just doubling the potential damage of this storm by going from, 100 being a bad storm to 200 being this is the worst ever recorded. It is a square of the differential of the speed. So, this is a horrible situation. It is, however, people, predicted.
People have a tendency to forget. It's not just like going from 100 to 200. It's all the stuff the things, between that,
It's one of the line that you use, can you hear me now? It's what God is actually saying to us, Yahweh. He told us that one of the birth pangs that would precede his return, in addition to World War, which we've now had, one World War, we call it World War II, but it's really the world's only World War, was World War II. We've had just a massive onslaught of terrorism, which he said would be one of the conditions, but he also said there'd be megaseismos, which is a substantial increase in the frequency and size of both earthquakes and also of hurricanes and tornadoes. And the United States, of course, is experiencing that with the tornadoes, and now the Philippines is experiencing it both with earthquakes and with this horrible typhoon or hurricane from using our parlance. So God is saying, are you paying attention? Are you listening to me? Now, he didn't cause this storm. He just told you that storms have become more prevalent in the last days.
Oh, yeah.
So this
we've
is
got one big political storm over here. It's unbelievable. You started out talking about, hey, I'm sorry. These guys are never sorry. They're never sorry. They're like,
well, they're sorry if they're embarrassed. And he's embarrassed right now, so he's sorry that he's embarrassed. A lot of people apologize when they're caught. Yeah, they've been caught. He's been caught in a terrible lie, and he can't say I lied, so he just says I'm sorry.
How often have you heard people say, I take responsibility? And then they go right back to work.
Yeah, I know. It's rare. The lady who is responsible for the failure of healthcare.gov went to the Senate hearings, the congressional hearings, and said, I take full responsibility. And they were so dumbfounded by the statement that the Republicans who were at Griller had no clue what to do next. And, the fact is she really isn't taking responsibility. If you fail that massively, you resign, which is how you take responsibility. But nonetheless, just a statement.
Reno took responsibility for a whole bunch of people getting killed down in Waco, Texas, and then went back to work the next day.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing too, that in Texas, I would be universally opposed to the Branch Davidians. I'm not opposed to their constitutional right to be deceived.
Right.
That's their choice. But
that's right.
The big problem with the Branch Davidians in Waco is that the ATF raid was specific to one thing, which is that they were alleged to have shotguns that were not compliant with Texas law. And so the raid was because of the non-conforming shotguns. Now, what does the Second Amendment say regarding America's ability to keep and bear arms?
That you're not to pass any laws prohibiting it.
Right. It actually says that because a militia is a requirement of a free society, there shall be no infringement on the people's right to keep and bear arms. So these are the very arms that the Constitution envisions are the kinds of arms that would be used in a militia. And so there really can't be any gun control in the United States that would be constitutional. So Janet Reno sworn to uphold the Constitution was in violation of the U.S. Constitution when they raided the Branch Davidian compound. And, yes, she was responsible, but continued with the job, continued to receive all the perks of being a government employee. There's a really sad trend, Larry, that's taking place in Europe. A survey found that 29% of Jews throughout Europe said that they had recently received considerably more threats relative to anti-Semitism. The highest figures were in Hungary, where half of the population said that they had been abused because they were Jewish. France, it was 46%. Belgium, 40%. You know, Belgium presents themselves as so liberal and so free. And of course, France is now a place where there is a disproportionate number of Muslims. It found 1 in 5 respondents had personally experienced at least one anti-Semitic verbal insult in the year prior to the survey. Perpetrators of the most serious incidents were described as being Muslims. Boy, but that was a big surprise. The second most prevalent source of anti-Jewish slurs are left-wing political views. It's interesting. Muslims are anti-Semitic. Communists and socialists are typically anti-Semitic, even though the founders of both communism and socialism were Jews.
And by the way, I would say, yeah, okay, they were put out there as Jews, but they were both Jesuit trained. I mean, even Lenin's father was a Baptist preacher. I mean, you know, and Stalin, he absolutely was a great Jew hater. I mean, wasn't he?
Well, it's interesting that
Jewish Freemasonry that was controlled by the Jesuits that put together, in my opinion, together.
Yeah, actually, Larry, there's a pretty good rift between the Jesuits and Judaism has been for a very, very long time. And to a significant degree, Adam Weishaupt, who was Jewish, and his creation of what we consider now to be political correctness and socialist secular humanism, he was very adversarial with the Jesuits. Nonetheless, anti-Semitism throughout Europe is on the rise, both on the left, the right, and with Muslims. To Shattering Myths, we're covering a story about anti-Semitism growing in Europe. Respondents said that the most frequent comments made by non-Jews towards Jews in the UK were that Israelis behave like Nazis towards the Palestinians and that Jews exploit Holocaust victimhood for their own purposes. It's just stunning. You know, the way that the Nazis dealt with the Jews was to take them away from their homes and separate families, to steal all of their possessions, including their bank accounts, to steal their homes, to haul them into to captivity and starve them to death or work them to death. And they killed 6 million of them. That's how the Nazis behaved towards the Jews. And, of course, the Nazis started a world war where 55 million people died. I mean, that might be really tough to remember in the U.K. because, well, you know, the U.K. was a constant victim of the Nazis. Now, the Jews asked the Muslims who were living in Israel after they were given this tiny slice of land representing 0.1% of the Middle East after the Holocaust, they asked the Muslims who were living there to join them in their new country, asked them to stay. It was the Muslims who told Muslims living in now Israel to leave so that the Islamic armies could slaughter Jews more freely. The Muslims who remained in Israel after Israel defeated the Islamic onslaught in their War of Independence became by far the best educated, the freest, the healthiest and the most prosperous Muslims in the world. And that experience of having Muslims prosper so much in this Jewish state caused Muslims to have a conniption fit, which is why they created the PLO to terrorize Muslims and to tell Muslims that rather than being beneficiaries of all these wonderful things, they needed to go kill those who had made life so enormously pleasant for them.
You know, it isn't just that. It's, you know, every other Muslim you run into from Europe, if you ask them who they are, what will they tell you? Well, I'm a Palestinian.
Yeah, and is there such thing as a Palestinian?
The Philistines were wiped out many years ago, and around 80 A.D., it was the Romans trying to stick it to a vanquished enemy. The Israelis, they renamed Israel Palestine. That's all that.
It was around 135 CE that occurred, but you are correct. The Philistines were wiped out, completely wiped out by the Assyrians over 2,600 years ago.
135 CE, they renamed it. I was thinking 88.
Yeah, 135
CE. Yeah,
right
after the...
The Bar Kokhba, Rabbi Akiva, a revolution against Rome. The Romans decided that since Israel was actually the province of Judea, is what the Roman province was called. In fact, it was called the province of Judea by virtually every country around the world. The Romans decided that since they were currently in control of it, that they had conquered it, that by defeating the Greeks is how they came to control it, that they that when the Israelites said, you know, we don't really like you here, and we don't like your just disgusting religion, we don't like your vicious politics, we don't want you here. And when they tried to expel them, the Romans responded by sending three legions into Israel. And ultimately, with the three legions, they destroyed the resistance. And as a result, Romans, being despicable, decided that we would no longer refer to the province as Judea, but that would come up with a name that was the most loathed of the Israelites, and the most loathed name was their original enemy, the Philistines, and so they renamed the place Philistina. Now, to be called a Palestinian, you have to be a complete and utter ignoramus. Believe that there's a Palestinian, you have to be an ignoramus.
Well, beyond that fact, there wasn't anybody there until the Jews went back to the land and rebuilt it. You know, one of the things that struck Samuel Clemens when he went through Israel, you know, of course, you know, they were going by horse and a wagon. He said you'd go days without seeing people. He says, this is the great land I hear about.
Part of it was because... What did the despicable Romans do as they were?
They salted the earth.
Right.
They
salted it just like they did with Carthage. So it was it became a place that was essentially uninhabitable, and it was really only because the Jews are so industrious and that they have such an affinity and love their homeland that they conceived ways to make barren land bloom. That's why Yahweh uses is the metaphor of the leafing out of the fig tree to describe the return of Israelites to their home. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about the anti-Semitism rise in Europe. The second thing that is being said in the UK, you know, the first was Israelis behave like Nazis towards the Palestinians. Well, it's the opposite. They treated the Muslims better than Muslims were treated in any Islamic country anywhere in the world. And there is no such thing as a Palestinian. There hasn't been a Palestinian on this planet for over 2,500 years. And if you don't know the name of people, if you don't know their roots, if they have to lie about their identity, they don't have a cause worth defending. The second is that Jews exploit the Holocaust for victimhood for their own purposes. Well, the only reason the Holocaust took place was because in the UK, they reneged on a deal that saved their country. And so for that to come out of the UK just reinforces my overall assessment of most people. particularly those that that articulate such idiotic opinions. They're nincompoops. I mean, the reason...
You know, can I point something out here? You know, during World War II, you know, the Jews were desperate to get out of Germany.
Right.
And they tried to go to Russia, and if Russia had been Jew-controlled, I mean, after all, you know, Lenin was a Jew. He was half-Jew. Wouldn't they have been allowed to go in there if the Jews really controlled Russia? They could have gone right into Russia. They were not allowed.
Yeah, the problem, though, of course, by that time, the problem was by that time, of course, that Stalin was in control of Russia.
Churchill wouldn't allow any Jews to go to England. FDR wouldn't allow any Jews to come to America.
They
were not allowed to escape. They were either killed or funneled down through Israel to be killed by the Mufti. And he worked with Eichmann.
That is correct.
So, now, that's the way it worked, period.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about how the Holocaust occurred. It occurred based upon two things. One is that in World War One, a fellow named Chaim Weizmann developed an ability to produce synthetic acetone that enabled the Brits to make wheels, tires, for their war apparatus, which they were not able to do because they had no other means of getting a natural version of the material required. And they were able to make smokeless gunpowder, which was vastly more efficient in their weaponry and a lot less deadly for their troops. Chaim Weizmann was credited with saving the UK as a result of his inventions, which he gave to the UK. And so the UK said, "What do you want for having saved us?" And he says, "I want nothing for myself. All I want is for my people to have their homeland. Their homeland is Judea. I want them to have their homeland." And so the British government in the Balfour Declaration committed, because now they controlled the entire Middle East. The reason they controlled the entire Middle East is that the Turks had decided in World War One, side against the UK. And so the UK, not wanting to have to fight the Turks directly, paid Muslims, bribed Muslims, and armed Muslims to go and fight their brother, the Ottoman Turks. And because the Ottomans were defeated, Great Britain claimed the entire Middle East and then chose how to divide it. And the decision, from Chaim Weizmann's point of view, with the Balfour Declaration, was to give Israel all of Israel and all of today's present-day Jordan. And the Muslims had a conniption fit. They were totally cool with the idea they were going to have their own fiefdoms, but to give Jews anything at all, much less 2% of the territory, well, that was unacceptable. And so the reason the Balfour Declaration didn't go through is because the UK decided to side with the Muslims against the Jews, and that is what left Jews in Europe and in Germany without a homeland, and therefore enabled the Holocaust, was because of the Jews of Great Britain welching on an agreement that they had made with Chaim Weizmann for an Israeli state that would have been all of present-day Israel and all of Jordan.
Even after that, the Jesuits were often put out front to do dirty work. They'd take Jewish names. You know, I mean, that was the exact tactic used by Charles Coughlin, the radio Jesuit priest in the 30s. The Jews
Roman
are
Catholic
getting
churches.
You. The Jews are getting you. The Jews are getting you. I would
Roman Catholic Church has played a horrible role in this. I mean, it's, if you look at the Roman Catholic Church and their work with the Ustasis.
They funded Hitler.
Yeah, if you look at their role, they were hugely responsible also for the Holocaust. But the point that you made is the single most responsible party, other than the conditions that were set up by the United Kingdom being dishonest and being disreputable, being immoral as it relates to their agreements, was because of Eichmann's and Hitler's relationships with the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. And he was the one who convinced Hitler that the proper technique with the Jews was not to take them to actually work camps where they would be treated fairly but be able to produce work on behalf of the German war machine. And what Hitler really wanted to do was just simply export them. And the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem came up with the notion of the final solution where he said, we don't want you to export them, we want you to exterminate them. And that is what he convinced Hitler and Eichmann to do. It was his idea. And so the Holocaust that gave birth to the modern state of Israel, which is blamed, and here's the UK saying the Jews are exploiting it. Well, it happened because Muslims sought to annihilate Jews, and it backfired on them. That's the story, and that's the truth.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, they also, you remember the protocols outlined, one of the things that they did was, you know, they set up these giant gulag systems, and it gave them practice to, you know, set up these giant death camps.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is the protocols which were promoted both in the USSR and in Nazi Germany, which was the protocols of the elders of Zion. The whole thing is a complete charade. The book, which was used to fan the flames of anti-Semitism to make Jews look like they're trying to set up a one world order, was a complete farce. The book was, the actual book, is a book that was written by in French. It was a novel that pitted, Frenchmen against, a devilish, imaginary, creatures. And the book, then the entire story was kept, but the devilish creatures were then the elders of Zion, and it made the elders of Zion out to be the devilish creatures that were trying to conquer the world. So rather than being the eternal protocols of Zionists, it was nothing but a novel. And Hitler and Stalin, those that perpetrated the myth that this was the protocols of the elders of Zion, they knew it was untrue. They knew it was a lie. They knew they were perpetrating a fraud. But most people are so ignorant. They're so irrational. They're so unwilling to be discriminating or exercise good judgment that they just go along with us.
Well, let me ask you something, Yada. Would it make more sense to you that people that had more control might be the wealthiest people in the world, the people that have raped the world for 2,000 years? Or would you say it would be the people that 70 years ago lost everything they ever had and they make up less than 0.2% of the population? Yet I hear time and time again, the Jews are getting us.
Yeah,
you know,
it's so amazing. There's a reason that, and that's why I really went to this story, because the story says that there's three groups of people that are fanning the flames of anti-Semitism, and their principal medium for doing so is the Internet. One is Muslims, because the Quran is the most anti-Semitic book ever written. The Quran's a more anti-Semitic book than is Hitler's Mein Kampf. The second is right-wing wackos, and the third is leftists, communists and socialists. So what do socialist secular humanists, right-wing religious wackos and political wackos, neo-Nazi types, and Muslims have in common? They all are influenced. Yeah, they all hate Jews. And yeah. Since we recognize that Jews are less than 0.2% of the world's population, and there is no record of Jews starting a war. Since the Jews are not aggressive, they're passive, and since they're not trying to expand their homeland beyond Judea and Samaria, what is it about the Jews that would cause these right-wing political, you know, Christian wackos, secular humanist atheist wackos, and Muslims all to hate them? Because they serve one purpose. While they are meaningless in terms of population, while they're meaningless in terms of wealth, while they're meaningless in terms of influence in the world, while they're meaningless in terms of their military power, meaningless. They're meaningful in one aspect only. Only one thing that differentiates Yehudim, which is the real name for these people, from the rest of the world. Only one thing.
They're creative, inventive, and productive, and that's about it. You know.
Well, actually, there's something. They are those things, but that's not what distinguishes them. What distinguishes them is that for reason only he can explain.
Oh, you mean
Yahweh chose
the children of the covenant?
Yeah, Yahweh chose them. They are the means. They are the means to the message. If you want to know the message of Yahweh, you've got to read books that Yahweh inspired Yehudim to write. And if you're going to be anti-Semitic, then you're anti-Yahweh. Their name means related to Yah.
So it's not. Yes, absolutely, it does, and it's not just that. It's not just that. This is just more confirmation of Scripture, is what it is. Why in the world? Is the entire world always focused around this little bitty parcel of land called Israel?
And these people that represent less than 0.2% of the world's population. Particularly since, of the 15 million Yehudim, Jews, Israelites in the world today, that's about 90% of them live in the United States and in Israel. I mean, they're not even spread around the world. They're concentrated in two places, and they have so little influence. Why is it that so many people hate them? And the answer is simple. They are the means to the message that Yahweh has conveyed with us. If you aren't willing to read the Torah, which the world would condemn as being a Jewish book, it isn't, it's Yahweh's testimony. But if you're not willing to consider what Yahweh's messengers have brought to us, then you have no way of ever knowing Yahweh, knowing God, engaging in a relationship with Him, being saved by Him. Who was Yahusha, after all? So I'm your host, Yada. We're here with Larry. It's kind of interesting with Christian, right-wing Christian anti-Semitism. And, of course, you've mentioned the Jesuits and the Roman Catholic Church and their anti-Semitic behavior over the years. How do you deal with the fact, if you're going to be a Christian and be anti-Jewish, anti-Yehudim, when the fellow that you've misnamed your religion after bears the title Hamasiah, and his name is Yahusha ben Yahweh. His name means the work of Yah, Yahweh saving us, the son of Yahweh. And you had to rename him, come up with a completely bogus name, Jesus Christ, which has no relevance to anything whatsoever. You think that maybe the Christians renamed him because they're anti-Semitic?
How do you hate the family and get it adopted into a family? Can you explain how
that
works?
Really? How does that work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how does that work? And how is it that you can claim to have based a religious faith on a fella that you don't know his name, you don't know his title, in fact, you've misnamed him, you've applied an erroneous title to him, and you completely disenfranchised him for the only thing that he himself paid attention to? He was Torah observant. And you completely disassociated him from the only thing that was meaningful in his life. And then, on top of all of that, you claim that men killed him. Great. And that, oh, by the way, when men killed your God...
God can't die.
Yeah, that not only did men kill your God, but that killing your God is the means to saving your life. these anti-Semites, they're not the only morons in the world. It's sad.
It's funny. Yes. I just watched a whistleblower that with the World Bank.
Yes.
IMF. And basically what she said was that they know now that it's the Jesuits controlling every dime going through there. She said that. She said it. And what did they do? They tried to drag her out of there with attorneys. 188 countries stood up and said, we want her reinstated because she's the only one doing a job. And, she says it right there. She goes, the Jesuits are controlling all the banking. Now, everybody wants to think, well, it's the Jews doing it to them. No, it's you got George Soros and a couple of names, and they put them out front. But idiots will fall for that every time. They'll take the bait. Yeah. They'll take the bait.
They will take the bait. There's an interesting story that's coming out of Pakistan recently. The United States decided that we're going to become the most murderous nation on Earth. So we fly our drones, and like we're playing a video game, we have these young boys go off and assassinate whole families of people with their drones. It's just like playing a video game. You get to reboot at the end of the day, I suppose. So we killed the leader of the Pakistani Taliban. And yet, Pakistan is trying to keep, the Pakistani Taliban from overturning the Pakistani government, which, by the way, just happens to have nuclear weapons. And so, this notion that you can kill your way to victory in a religious war, what do you suppose happened once the United States killed the leader of the Taliban?
What do I think happened?
Yeah, what did the Pakistani Taliban
created
do?
More. I'd say it probably created more chaos and more of them stepped right up. What happened?
They chose Mullah Fazlullah to be the new head of the Pakistan's Taliban. He's a fellow that is known for his public radio addresses, where he calls for more public beatings and executions of anyone who denounces fundamentalist Islam. He's the one that denounced the polio vaccinations. He's called Mullah Radio. In other words, he's more fundamentalist, which means he's more vicious, more of a terrorist, more ruthless than was his predecessor. It is very much like what America did when we decided that we would oust Saddam Hussein, who was a secularist from Iraq, and we got a government that is now controlled by Iran. If you don't know what you're doing...
It's a lot like ousting Bush to get Obama, too, if you think about it.
Yeah, I don't know which one of those two is worse, but it is a sad state of affairs when you think you can kill yourself to victory, murder to victory, when you're fighting a religious foe, not recognizing that for everyone you kill, you will manufacture 100 more, and you will only make the situation worse. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Mist. We'll be back after the news and commercial break.